Well, this is a rollicking romp of a conversation in three parts. I'm chatting with Dr. Elliot Justin from myfirmtech.com. Links are in the show notes. Dr. Elliot has a background in emergency medicine and more recently specializing in sex and technology. We started by having a chat about his product lines, as agreed, which might be of a slightly narrower range of interest compared to what we normally cover on the show. And it's a bit more commercially oriented than the vibe we usually go for. Then, about 24 minutes in, if you want to jump to it, although, you know, the first bit's got some stuff for everyone in there, so give it a go. Anyway, we then move into a conversation that I found to be really interesting about the broader future of artificial intelligence and sex toys. And that conversation ranges from being about stuff which is frankly like flights of fancy through to stuff which is just downright depressing. And you know how much I love the stuff that others think of as depressing. Finally, the last third of the conversation is the conversation you have at the end of the actual conversation where you're like, hey, thanks for coming on and having a chat. And the other person's like, no worries, you're welcome, it was great. And you're like, oh, thank you. And then like you just kind of hang around and have like a, you know, chat about seriously, like, thanks for coming on. And sometimes you get raving and ranting on about other stuff, as was the case on this occasion. And normally I just delete that. But there's nothing personal or revealing in there. And I think it's interesting. So I'm just going to go right ahead and leave that in today. When I was recording it, I was going to chop things around a little bit and put the philosophical stuff first and the product stuff second. But listening back, I actually think there might be something there for everyone. So I'm just going to leave the whole thing unedited. Including the bit at the end that's not meant to exist. Don't tell anyone. So here's a conversation about cock rings, clitoris monitoring devices, health and heart care, the future of robots and AI, the end of the species, and the problems with taking on an algorithm for happiness and hand jobs. Good luck with that. One final little word of warning. Generally speaking, I try avoid letting through language that assumes that people of a given gender have any particular genital type as a way to make things more inclusive. In some ways, today's show is a little bit of a fail here and there on that front. So heads up on that. At the same time, there is some useful information here about how these products are very useful from a trans perspective, and those things are spoken about appropriately. So in some ways, today is a win. I don't know. Glass half empty, podcast half full, you be the judge. So with us today is Dr. Elliot Justin, who has a background in emergency medicine and more recently specializing in sex and technology. Welcome, Elliot. Thanks for coming on the show.
It's great to be here.
Great. Perhaps if we could start a little on the general side, I'd love to get your take on the current landscape. So I'm something of a beginner when it comes to technology and sex toys and sex equipment. Can you give us a bit of an outline as to where sex and technology is at the moment, what the broad categories of products are? I mean, I gather there's been a whole technology revolution since last time.
Sure. I looked. Well, I'd like to distinguish, when I talk about sex tech, I'd like to distinguish between two classes of products, if you will, although they do overlap, but two classes of products. There are products that are novelties, and that's not what I'm doing. A novelty, and they're fun, but a novelty would be, hey, Roger, you're in Australia, Melbourne, and I'm here in Montana, but we're lovers. And right now, we just have a probe up our butts, and we're vibrating each other, and we're putting on goggles and watching the same genre of porn. Now, that's kind of fun concept, to my mind, you know, it's a novelty. And then there are niches.
Or novelties are sort of more hedonism-centric?
There are niches. So on the male side, there's a company called MyHixel, and they are an app and a device stroker for training men to get out of premature ejaculation. And that's on the health side. We as a company straddle both areas. We are one for all men, all people with penises, and we are we're delivering data that allow men to track and hack their sexual health, and but we also are enhancing pleasure. So we also are a superior erection ring for men. On the male side, there frankly there's not very much. There's My Hicks I mentioned in terms of tech. Then there are these apps, sex apps I mentioned before. There's a company called Adam in England that has a device that's more primitive version of what we're doing. The female, and then there are strokers. And strokers in the United States have never really caught on. They look like something you could beat your partner to death or yourself to, self to death with. They're clunky and they're not really an improvement on the hand.
What are they exactly? And they're for penises or for vulvas or
Yeah,
for.
strokers are penises. So strokers are essentially a sheath that goes over your penis. It has vibrators inside of it, and there are apps you can tune. You can play different vibrations. You can even coordinate with music or coordinate with porn. And on the female side, there are a lot of sex tech things for where term where a woman is in her cycle, for fertility, for mood, for work. There are apps to help address postmenopausal issues. But the female on the sex side, the female side is a world of vibrators, and vibrators have transformed sexual health for women, not just sexual pleasure, but sexual health. I'm 71 years old. In my lifetime, originally in the United States, and I'm certain Australia too, women were described quite often negatively. They were frigid, they were anorgasmic, they were hysteric. These are women who had difficulties, climaxing. And those words have, for the thanks to feminists, those words have fallen out of fashion. We don't, and vibrators have made things relatively easier for for women. Not just on the male side, though. There ain't much, but there are.
So, there's a lot there. Just going back to one that I was curious about that I haven't heard about. You mentioned about devices for managing premature ejaculation. Walk us through them. How do they work?
Sure. Well, the they basically there are two types. One, there are strokers that reproduce supposedly the sensation of the inside of a vagina, so they don't provide the friction that a hand can or a mouth can. And men will use these in order to not come not ejaculate so frequently.
So it's a little around like training yourself, desensitizing is not the right word, but becoming familiar with the sensitivity because I gather a lot of premature ejaculation or some premature ejaculation is around just almost like overwhelm of sensory input.
Correct.
So it's a way
Correct.
to normalize and get used to that.
Yes, that's right. Now, and then there are devices like ours. We have a device called the Maxim Performance Ring that is designed to keep men comfortably hard even after they climax.
How does it do
So if
that?
a man, well, most conventional cock rings are these O rings, and they're like a gasket for your dick. And they're and, you know, see. In order to be most effective, a man has to be erect beforehand because they're cutting off the blood flow of the penis. They're cutting off the arterial flow in and the venous flow out of the penis. Well, it's kind of like lynching your penis. Who wants to put a noose in their dick? I don't know about you, but they never really appealed to me. And they've never really caught on in the straight world. They're a fixture in the gay world. And because of their constrictive nature, they can only warm for 20 or 30 minutes because they're cutting off the circulation to every guy's favorite bit. And if a man already has compromised circulation with diabetes and hypertension, and I assume in Australia, like the United States, half the adult population unfortunately does because of bad living habits, or genetics. I don't know about you, but I'm not interested in having sex 20 or 30 minutes. I like to have sex for 45, 50 minutes, 60 minutes. So just getting back into what I'm doing, I was challenged by a urologist to come up with a way of counting the number of nocturnal erections that men have. So, and I was unaware of this, that, you know, but the number of nocturnal erections that a man has, ones he has while he's sleeping, he's unaware of, is a leading indicator of a man's cardiovascular health. So if a man who, and we should average 3 to 5 per night, if that number goes from 5 to 3 or 3 to 0, that man has a cardiovascular problem that needs to be proven otherwise. So if a man my age, I'm 70, goes from 3 nocturnal erections to 0 or 1 nocturnal erection, I have 50% chance of having a heart attack in the next 2 years. So that's an alarming number. So in medicine, we treat associations. High blood pressure is associated with heart attack. It's not predictive, but decline in nocturnal erections is predictive of cardiovascular disease and/or significant medication side effect. So when I had to come up with a way of counting the number of nocturnal erections, I had to reinvent the Cochrane. And I wasn't even thinking about this when this problem came to me. So our cock rings are made out of elastomer. They're not made out of silicone. So there's not a tight gasket in your penis. The silicone makes you adapt to it. Elastomers adapt to you. So we don't block the arterial flow into the penis. We just constrain the venous return. So our cock rings can produce a more powerful erection, harder, longer lasting, and more intense orgasm in men the following way. One, you don't take it off after 20 minutes. You can have sex for a longer period of time. Two, if a man does climax, the ring, unlike these tight, uncomfortable rings made out of silicone, a man can wear a ring afterwards. The average man stays hard 4 or more minutes after ejaculation with our ring. Well, if a man has premature ejaculation and wants to keep thrusting and satisfy their partner, that can be achieved, you know, with our ring. Plus, our rings were designed to intensify a man's orgasm. How? By putting the right amount of pressure over the urethra. So women have vibrators, and they've been mainstreamed. You know, back in the 70s or 80s, before you were born, they were there was a certain shame, embarrassment for women using, you know, being vibrator dependent, not being able to climax without, you know, without a vibrator. And that's just totally gone. You know, from Australia to Berlin, you know, these have been, they're normal, they're normalized. There's no longer any shame or embarrassment associated with their use.
So just going back to the question of how they actually work. So it sounds like
Sure.
your ring has got two elements to it. One is the sort of the passive element that's like familiar to most cock rings, in that they have the capacity to assist in maintaining erection. It's also got built-in active technology, which is more to do with the using nocturnal erections as an indicator of
Or sex
cardiovascular
erections.
health.
No, because our ring is the only smart cock ring that can be worn during sex. So we don't have a vibrator in it. We already we come in October, we're adding a vibrator component. But vibrators don't really do much for men. They're secondary. So what enhances a man's pleasure with our ring is the right amount of pressure over the urethra to draw out the ejaculation. So my ejaculation with the ring, our ring, goes from 4 seconds to 7 seconds. That's a dynamite orgasm. I know I don't have sex. You know, I 2 years ago I never you know I rarely had sex with a ring because they sucked. These cock rings, they made out of silicone, they pinch, they're uncomfortable, they're novelties. Now I don't have sex without a ring, specifically our maximum performance ring, which is our biggest seller because the orgasm is so much more powerful.
And then we just lastly on the active side of it. So if the system identifies that you might be at risk, you get a little notification on your phone
Get
saying,
notification.
"Hey,
That's right.
time to see a GP or a
Yeah, but
urologist."
actually, I mean, we say that, but most, and we know that, you know, look, medical legally, and, you know, in fact, with people's health, we recommend that they don't make any changes in their medications or therapy without discussing with their doctor. But I know most people are really uncomfortable talking about these things with their doctors. And I know that most of our customers are doing things on their own. But with this technology, you can see, gee, am I going to benefit from shockwave therapy? Am I going to benefit from testosterone replacement therapy? If I am, using those expensive therapies, what's the right dosage? The same thing with PDE5 medication, like say Cialis, which is the number one PDE5 medication, Viagra-like medication in the United States, and probably in Australia too. Is it more? What's the right dose? You know, urology and sexology are really primitive right now. If you and I are both different ages, different body habituses, if we went to a doctor and said, gee, you know, my pulse is really strong. I'm worried I might have high blood pressure. And the doctor said, Yeah, Roger, your pulse is really strong. Take this pill and come back in 3 months. We think, what the fuck is this? 1900? You have blood pressure cuff in the office? You have electrocardiogram machine here? How about some blood tests? But when it comes to sexology or urology, it's you got ED, take a pill.
Yeah,
Come back in 3 months.
it's so true, the point you make around fear of getting shamed by the professional or just the professional's lack of knowledge around certain things is such a barrier to bringing things up and seeking help, whether it's in the medical profession or I've got sort of a counselling psychology background, so in that sector as well. And it's not just to do with sexual function and performance or desires, but the whole complexity of relationship dynamics and yeah.
Well, I mean, think about it, Roger. I mean, think about how sex, how vital sex is to our happiness. Whether we're masturbating or whether we're having sex with someone else, how vital it is. We know that people who have sex every day can cut their cortisol levels, the stress hormone, by 50%. We know that big study in the UK, that men over the age of 70 have sex twice a week, can cut their cardiovascular risk by up to 50%. And we know that in committed relationships, straight or gay, men who have sex twice a week with their partner versus twice a month have half the separation divorce rates. So the impact of sex, this is enormous. And we doctors, we're assholes. We don't ask. I've never had a doctor ask about my love life. I've never had a doctor warn me about the sexual side effects of medication. And worse, we prescribe two types of medications that are cock killers. We prescribe SSRI antidepressants and blood pressure medications, which, and in combination, is even worse. These things can have a negative impact on men's sexual health. So utilizing technology, a man can say, "Whoa, wait a second, I'm taking this antidepressant, and now my erections are 25% less hard." Or, you get the point.
Yeah,
Men can now track it to hack it.
there's probably you mentioned about the correlation between separation rates and amounts of sex. There's a funny little chicken and egg thing there, but I wish I'd asked you the question of what are the benefits of sex? So let's circle back because I've also heard you mentioned a few great ones there. I've also seen some research, can't think of it off the top of my head, around immunity, more sexual contact. People, there's a correlation between people who have more sexual contact and higher immune levels.
People, I mean, it's an association, but people have sex 5 times a week. They have the flu for like, I forget what it was, 36 hours or 48. The flu lasts doesn't last, doesn't last long. They're less likely to get the common cold. Yeah,
I want a
there's
t-shirt
even
that says
people.
do it for COVID. I'm sorry, go on.
Hey, when I got COVID, it only lasted 12 hours, and I have sex every day. Man, it must be so. Yeah. So the benefits of regular sex are really significant, and people, doctors are inhibited to talk about it. I especially doc, I'm straight doctors, so we know that. I mean, one of my goals is to mainstream cock rings for men, because cock rings for men give them vital. Now they have a smart cock ring, give them vital data about not just their sexual health, but their cardiovascular health, as well as the impact of medications and side effects. But they can also really enhance a man's pleasure and confidence. They need to be mainstream the way vibrators have for women.
Okay, and you've also got a product for vulvas. Can you talk us through that one a little?
Well,
What's
it's
its
not for
function?
vulvas. It's for the clitoris. So
Okay.
that's in R&D. So we've tested it on 18 women. And I might have one on my desk here. Hey, Annie, is there a Clitique up here? I can
It's
show it to
okay.
you. I've got
We're
that.
going to be an audio-only medium, so
Oh, really? Only, okay, never mind. Okay, sorry about
yeah.
that. Never mind. We've tested.
So it's a device that fits in the vagina and cups over the vulva and
Cups over the
measures
clitoris.
clit. So, all right,
Because
yeah.
we're really interested in the health of it. This is where I'm interested in the health of the penis, blood flow, neurovascular health of the penis. I'm interested in neurovascular health of the clitoris.
Okay,
That's what it looks like.
because from the biology side, we're talking about much of the same tech and the same engorgement function and activity we've got going on in penises, we've also got going on in
Exactly.
clitoris. Yeah.
And women are.
So it's the same strategy from your perspective, in the same way that you can use that as an indicator for health, exactly the same thing in people with vulvas.
Correct. People with vulvas, I'm going to say people with clitoris, even if they've had trans, even if they've had, if they
Oh,
if they've had
nice.
surgery, because they're still working with Well, a redesigned penis, if you will. But they need blood flow in order to function sexually, and in order to determine the right level of hormones, straight or trans, you need a device to assess the blood flow. So that's essentially what we're doing. We're measuring the engorgement of the penis, and one overnight we're counting episodes of nocturnal clitoral arousal.
Yeah,
no one has studied this as Mass and Johnson, and it's hard to study because people are asleep, and it's interesting. You know, I'll go to meetings of sexologists or urologists, and I'll say, okay, well, how many people here had nocturnal erections last night? And some guys will raise their hands. The women never raise their hands, but they have them too.
Okay,
and we think that they're going to be just it's going to be just the same as men, but probably about the same number, same duration, and with that data, women. Like men, vulva owners, straight women, you know, they could then measure the impact of diseases, diabetes, hypertension, obesity, medications, antidepressants, antihypertensives, exercises, supplements, alcohol, recreational drugs upon their sexual health.
Okay. And you've also mentioned about it's a way to calibrate around birth control pills?
Correct. You know, for premenopausal women, this will be enormously valuable because premenopausal women, that's what I'm here about, straight or lesbian, not trans, there are other issues. These two medications have a significant impact upon their libido and their sexual health. And frankly, I think the whole, yes, sorry, antidepressants just shouldn't be, they should not be used in my mind. They're dangerous medications overall. But people are able to measure the benefits. So we've tested this device on 38 women, and we will bring out this device probably in the second or third quarter next year.
Just passing, like side story, can you say a little more around saying you think SSRIs should be banned or
not banned? That's strong. Not banned. I think people.
Let's rephrase that a little bit. Can you speak a little to what are your concerns there?
Well, I really want to focus on this specific area, which is in men they can produce delayed ejaculation, premature ejaculation, weaker erections, and there is a small number of men when they stop taking them still suffer from their effects, and we don't know whether it's central or peripheral, and that's dangerous, and it's one thing to my mind for a man who's severely depressed who might genuinely benefit from this to take it over a short term, but there always needs to be a plan to take these people off it, and they don't do it. The doctors, psychologists don't do it. They keep them on them for years and years and years.
Yeah, I know in what I've witnessed as a sex educator, people often talk about SSRIs from the perspective of. They can be hit and miss, and obviously there is a plus side because they work extremely well for some people some of the time. We can at least say that much. But I imagine you've heard, like what I hear a lot is when people go on SSRIs, they notice their libido or interest in sexuality drops off. They often have some really challenging weight change and body change situations to deal with and inability to orgasm. So for some people, it's like, well, I solved some problems, but then created this other whole batch of problems, which made me depressed. So
we have men utilizing our device to cut back to figure out the right dosage. Where I might get benefit at this amount of milligrams. If I go beyond that, which my doctor might want to go beyond that, but I'm not going to go beyond that because that has an impact upon my erection.
So it's a calibration tool. Yeah. It's a funny thing just to finish off on the SSRI thing. It'd be great to just touch on like what our suggestions, what our recommendations are. I mean, the only one I'm aware of is find a therapeutic modality that actually helps and works to get behind your core issues. But that's so much easier said than done. For one thing, finding a therapist you're comfortable and compatible with is harder than finding a partner.
Yes. And doctors, you know, we're pill pushers,
right?
And that's a problem. That's our mindset. It's not just about making money. It's about that's the mindset in which we're trained in medical school and in medical practice, and it's also how we do get rewarded financially for that as well too. I'm going to draw an analogy to something. So everyone has experienced at some point an ankle sprain at some point in their life. Usually, it's the most common orthopedic injury in the United States. It's probably the most common orthopedic injury in Australia as well too. Well, in our healthcare system, and likely in yours too, if you call me up and said, "Hey, Elliot, I think I sprained my ankle," and I said, "Well, can you stand up on it?" "Oh, you can bear weight, but it's painful." "Oh, you can take 3 steps." "You know what? Just put ice on it." I would collect nothing. Mm. The healthcare system rewards doctors nothing for giving out advice. Mm. Now, if I bring you into the office and, well, I guess I'll take an x-ray. And then I might as well put it, even if you don't need it, I'll put a splint on it, and et cetera. And the whole, the system rewards doing things that aren't necessarily therapeutic. And the doctors start to associate those things with the right behavior.
Yeah. It's almost like patients. It's almost like capitalism and healthcare don't really mix perfectly.
Yeah, not the socialism healthcare, because then you have the problem. I mean, no one flies to rural Russia for healthcare, you know, or to rural China for healthcare too. So, or Cuba for that matter. So there are problems on both ends. And I really that's a whole other longer conversation than this.
Well, yeah,
it's a lot of fun talking about sex.
Zooming out a little from those specific toys, do you have thoughts on where we're going at the moment with a combination of dolls and AI starting to function as partners, as replacements for actual flesh human beings?
Have you had sex with a doll?
Have I had sex with a doll? I've not.
Well, well, I'm an experiment.
However,
I'll do anything once. I have once.
I'm probably not. Okay, so at the risk of exposing my naivety, I imagine it's true, at least at the moment, historically, that dolls have been interesting if a person is not, doesn't have access to a human partner. Would it be fair? Would that be a fair approximation?
It would, but I don't think the dolls are there yet, but the artificial intelligence is getting there.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that in Japan. There's some buzz or some literature, some research has been done about that in Berlin. And here in the United States, it's estimated that 1.2, 1.5 million men have their primary relationship with a female avatar. And if it's that many men in the United States, it's probably 700,000 men in Australia.
Yeah.
And it's kind of freaky, and because those avatars know more. They're not, you know, they learn what you like, and not that, it's just this relationship is not just limited to sex. It's, hey, I know your music. You want to hear this?
Yeah.
I know your taste in books. How about, shall we order this for you? I know your taste in food. Why don't you make this recipe tonight? And so they really can become profoundly interactive.
It's a fascinating prospect.
On the doll side, though, the haptics, which are feelies, like a Brave New World. There or in Woody Allen's, what's that show? The Orgasmatron, one of the Woody Allen movies early on. The haptics aren't there yet. You can't yet reproduce the sensation of a hand, or mouth, or vagina, or rectum yet. I'm certain though that it will get there, and you know I think it's the end of the human race.
You think it's the end of the human race? Why?
We're probably about two generations away. I think people, if people get, well, you see it with younger people. They people struggle to date.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know how to talk to each other. They're more comfortable talking, often talking to their phone,
or
dealing with an app than they are with people.
So I'm really interested in what you're saying. One of the things I wanted to ask you about was social media came along with the promise of connecting us all. And to a degree, that's been true. But we've also discovered that the dark downside of it is that it's actually keeping us apart. It's making us more polarized and scared and hateful of each other and shrinking us back into our bubbles rather than opening us up to the world and diversity. I wonder if the same risks are there with, let's call them AI partners. where so the promise there is that you've got a solution to loneliness and someone who, as you were just saying, knows you intimately and perfectly, you could argue, like over the course of time, they can track your positive feedback to things and track your negative feedback, and they can be perfect. So on one level, that's a solution for loneliness. But yeah, does it take us down a track where there's a dark side there, which has to end in the opposite of?
Well, there are several. There are a couple of dark sides. One is that if I was involved in it. I'm probably the only doctor on the planet who has had an electrode implanted by their pudendal and cavernous nerves, everyone's two favorite nerves that no one has heard about, the nerves involved with erection and an orgasm. Because I want to know if human sexuality could be neuromodulated. So the paradigm for neuromodulation is like it's a cardiac pacemaker. Everyone knows about that. You put an electrode by the heart and you control, you can pace the heart. I was interested in pacing human sexuality. And I failed. But someone will succeed in doing that very, yeah, very soon.
There is no fail. There's just more information now than we had before.
Yeah, and if you can pace human sexuality, you can also turn it off.
Yeah, okay.
That's one of the dark side. The dark side of robots and sexual avatars. Well, look, right in front of me on my desk, you can't see him right now because we're on audio, is my dog. I love my dog. But there are over 100,000 people in Japan who own robot dogs. Now, that's kind of weird to my mind. But I can see how a robot dog, they don't have to scoop their poop, you don't have to feed them. You know, a robot dog, if you're introduced to a robot dog when you were 2 years old, 3 years old, that might become a better companion than a real dog. Well, the same risk, not that I'm going to compare sexual or romantic partners to dogs, but the same risk is there, though, and probability, too, is that when that does occur, a substantial number of people are going to prefer that relationship. That's non-confrontational. That's risk-free. That is, gives you everything you want. You don't have to negotiate to get what you want. You don't have someone who's they don't get mad at you ever, et cetera. They know all your kinks.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Fascinating. So, I mean, one of the things we're moving away from, the concept of relationships that meet our needs and enliven us and that we grow from and where we feel respected and so forth, obviously that's a positive and a valuable thing, but it's also a radical departure from where we were even just 100 years ago. We've shifted very recently from relationship as survival or relationship as business model through to the idea of being met and evolving and growing with a partner. And one of the things that we've thrown out the window is we used to think of it as forbearance and tolerance. And I would never under any circumstances suggest that anyone forbears and tolerates bad behavior, bad partners or anything like that. But we don't necessarily have the other aspects of that, which is the capacity to accept people where they're at and to stay and work through things. Like a lot of people get into relationships, once you get past the exciting initial 3 months, maybe 3 years if you're really lucky, we don't have the conflict resolution skills, the communication skills, etc. So I can see that if we've got the option for AI partners, it potentially provides us with even more of an easy way out of that situation. So initially, that's going to be more attractive to people who are lonely, can't find partners. I mean, even sitting here, I have multiple partners, but I am curious about AI relationships myself. But I imagine if I was more lonely, the attraction there would be extremely strong. So in the short term, it's going to feel like it's a solution because I've got company, I've got someone to chat to, depending on how the technology side of things go, perhaps I can get some or all of my sexual needs met. But 10, 20 years down the track, I'm going to be even further from having the skills and the capacity and the confidence and the familiarity to meet people. And that's why you're predicting no more humans in two generations.
And also, once you get involved in an AI relationship that's satisfying, you're not going to have children.
Right.
And your AI partner doesn't need you to have children either. And so if we eliminate the need to have children, which certainly from my grandparents was a necessity in terms of the way they lived. I'm 71 years old, and they needed each other's labor, and they needed the children's labor in order to progress in life.
Yeah.
And that's not the case today, and that's one of the and then we. So now, is that for the best for our souls? I would, you know, I'm a romantic. I would like to say it's not, but I could be wrong. I mean, I have, you know, I've been married for 36 years. I've known my wife for 47 years. I you know, from our perspective, there was something, if you will, providential to talk about our relationship, because we went out for 6 weeks and when I was in medical school, had a great time and then broke up. Hey, it was great. Great. To your point, hey, it was a great 6 weeks and now we were on the verge of not getting along. Let's just move on. Perfect. And then we met 11 years later on the street in New York City. And there was a third person there who my wife knew and who I knew, but we would without that person there, we would have walked by each other. Mm. There's something uncanny about that.
It's going to be fun to watch. We're in for such interesting times between what we've just been talking about and also the fact that we have increasingly robots of various forms are going to be serving a lot of our labor needs. We're in for such a fascinating period of change. It's going to be interesting to watch the pendulum swing back from AI partners, I think. I don't know. Maybe we can check in 20 years.
Well, I'll be dead then. You'll be around. But I actually
don't underestimate medical technology, Dr. Elliot.
I think that when people start having robot relationships with smart robots, and I think it's going to occur, a singularity will occur in the next probably 6 to 10 years, especially for rich people, and they start and children introduced to them at an early age. People, they're going to prefer those relationships because the relationships aren't challenging at all. And the robot can do everything for you, including your homework, including taking out the garbage, including shopping, including giving you the best hand job you've ever had in your life because you never had a hand job from anyone else or whatever. I think the future is dark. If you think – go ahead.
I wonder – so I'm a kink educator as well. I wonder if the time will come where we will start to think of human relationships as a fetish.
Yes. and that's the point of the end of Brave New World.
Right.
I mean, remember the book box, like, you know, I mean, almost everyone loves to live in this world of soma and the satisfaction of all their needs, largely so by artificial means. And then there's the people who go off to the island who want to be liberated into a world where they're tested physically and emotionally, but it's an option.
Okay, well, that's just about the bleakest point to leave a conversation, but I also find it exciting.
Well, here's a positive point. Yeah, I'll make two positive points.
Yeah, and anything else you want to say by way of finishing up and rounding out?
50% of men by age 50 have erectile dysfunction. It's close to 30% by age 30. Diseases like, for better and for worse, diabetes, hypertension, obesity, atherosclerosis, the numbers are pandemic numbers. Half the population, adult population. Men can now learn objectively about their sexual health. They can use a device like our tech ring to get the data that is objective, actionable, and personal. So they have a problem with sexual health, or if they want to not have a problem because and they want to monitor where they are, they now have technology that can help them achieve that. Men can now have not just only get data by putting a ring on it, they can also last longer and have more intense orgasms, and those are two really positive things. And here at FirmTech in the United States, we often joke that FirmTech might be the good news story of 2024 because of the political situation in my country. In your country.
And also less COVID. All right, wonderful. Dr. Elliot Justin, thank you so much for your time and your thoughts today. I really enjoyed that diversion around the bleak future and where AI is going. I'll leave links to your specific products that you're talking about there in the show notes. Best of luck with addressing those issues.
You. Yeah. And people can read about us at myfirmtech.com. And as I told you earlier, we have a distributor in Australia. So people can – and hey, Australia, keep on using our products. I mean, here we are in the United States, and Australia is 8% of our business.
All of those links will be in the show notes.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Hey there, listener. I'd like to make you a little proposal. I love making this podcast for free because it helps me spread the word about sex positivity. But I could use your help in spreading the word just by sharing this episode, if that's not too absurd. For every 10 stories that you listen to, please recommend it to someone that might like it too. This is not a real contract, for you got no say. I would if I could frame it some other way. And if sharing's not for you, that's fine. There's nothing to do. Please listen without guilt to this podcast I built.
Awesome. So that's the end of that. So yeah, wonderful. Thanks. That was a really fun, interesting diversion. And yeah, thanks so much for explaining the details of your products.
And thanks so much for bringing up the AI issue. That was interesting. I like talking about it.
Yeah, that was cool.
You know, I went to Sex Tech in Berlin last year, and it's Berlin. It's like Sydney or, you know, New York. The kink scene there is intense. So there were about 300 computer nerd male and female kinksters there, and most of my talk was on what I talk about, which is positive sexual health technology to improve people's sexuality or reverse disease. Most of the talks were about the future of generative pornography, AI, haptics, trying to get the feelings right in the hands, so you are in this 3D. 3D, 4D world, actually, and you're feeling the ideal breast or the ideal cock. For a lot of the people, at one point, I think someone said, "Well, how many people here have a sexual AI relationship?" It was like 40% of the audience, and there were about 300 people that raised their hands.
It is really genuinely bleak, because to the best I can get a take on this, I feel like a lot of women are just leaving the dating and relationship scene. They're just like, fuck it, fuck men, I can't be bothered. And so there's definitely like some loneliness epidemic happening on the female side, but there's a huge amount of it happening on the male side. And, you know, incels are an example of how that plays out a little bit, and the gaming culture and community is a part of that, maybe. It's distressing to play that out.
One of the points I didn't make earlier, which you might want to add at some point, is our device, for better or for worse, allows the gamification of sex.
Right.
So, in the future, I know this is going to happen, because there are gay guys doing this already in the United States. People want to put on their dating app, hey, here's my erectile fitness data.
Whoa.
So people
use their like jogging app at the moment to compare their track times and everything else.
It's like a Strava of sex. It could be, you know, that guy might drive a Porsche and make nine figures, but his dick isn't hard.
There's so much about this that's tragic.
On the positive side, there's a doctor in Kuwait who is using our rings to assess the sexual health of men in arranged marriages. In that culture, hey, I'm marrying my 20-year-old girl, my princess, to this 7-year-old guy who's really, really fabulously rich. Can he get him? Can he produce a son?
Wow, it's an interesting future. All right, let's leave it there for the moment. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Roger. That was fun.
Okay, cheers. It was. Okay, bye.